Welcome to Leadershipadelic Season 3. My name is Sebastian Fouillade. Join us every week to discover how deep spiritual experiences have influenced people's leadership and how they build a better future for themselves, for their family, for their community, and at work. We cover a variety of topics from yoga to mindfulness, meditation, prayer, creativity, brain mapping, alternative medicines such as psychedelics, and so much more. By learning from these experiences, we can raise our understanding of leadership and build a better future together. If you're a returning listener, thank you so much for your support. It means the world to me. And if you have time, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or share this with a friend. Thank you and enjoy the program. This week, meet Luke Jensen, founder and CEO of Neuro Enlightenment, a company at the intersection of neuroscience and plant shamanism. We worked with Luke and his team during the Sacred Creativity Retreat to measure the impact of ayahuasca ceremonies and creativity workshops on our guests. We were blown away with the results. Luke is from Nebraska and joined the U.S. Marines when he was 18. After returning from his deployment to Afghanistan in 2011, Luke was searching for meaning in life. He experienced ayahuasca, which changed and reshaped his perspective of reality. This sent him on a quest to Peru, where he spent time living in the jungle with Shipibo healers. Luke started learning about QEG brain mapping and different types of brain training. He eventually became passionate about the potential of brain mapping and training in conjunction with plant medicines. This led him to the creation of Neuro Enlightenment. We cover Luke's personal journey from the Marines to his deep soul work that followed, what led him to brain mapping, and what is seen during his work at the intersection of neurofeedback and spirituality. This is a fascinating interview, and after talking with Luke and using brain mapping ourselves during the retreat, I'm convinced brain mapping is a tool with huge potential in the psychedelic space. Enjoy the show. This is one not to be missed, and see you on the other side. Luke, welcome. It's such a pleasure to have you here today. How are you doing?
Doing really well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to watch your journey. Like, we met, I think, like 4 or 5 years ago at an ayahuasca ceremony. And at the time, you were really into like runes, and you even gave me like a painting on one of the runes. And it was really special. And we met in Seattle.
Yeah.
And then somehow we met back here.
Yeah.
Thanks to the projects you're doing right now. So can you share a little bit about what you've been up to, and before we dive in your journey?
Yeah, so I've been back and forth from Peru for about 5-6 years now. And this time I've been here for a year and a half. And now that I'm in Peru, I'm doing what's called QEGs, brain mapping, and neurofeedback brain training.
Okay.
And we specialize in the spiritual realm of both of these.
Okay, that sounds really cool. And we're going to dive a little bit deeper into that later. But like, how did you end up there? Because I've been like, from what I understand, you were from in the Marines.
Yeah.
And now you're in Peru doing brain mapping. I mean, that's, I wouldn't expect that.
No, I hear that a lot, actually. And sometimes I surprise myself how my life has changed and how I've got here. I was in the Marines for 8 years. I deployed to Afghanistan in 2011. And when I got back, the Marine Corps wasn't going to be my career for me. The military wasn't going to be a career. And I was an officer path, and that was my goal in life, and different things happened. And it was kind of a shock to the system. I wasn't sure if I really wanted to do the military anymore. Mm. But at that point, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I felt really lost.
Yeah, yeah.
And most things, coming back home from being, I was in infantry, coming back home from being outside the wire every day.
Where's your home?
Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay.
And there wasn't a whole lot that really interested me compared to the lifestyle I was living. Normal business job wasn't really for me. Actually, an old friend called me up. He has a small railroad company.
Yeah.
He asked me if I want to work for him. And at the time, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I work for a friend. I'm like, I don't have anything else going on. So I started working on the railroad, and I started traveling the country for a number of years.
What do you do on the railroad?
We build railroad crossings. Okay. So we build, the arms come down, lights flash, and we go around. We're a small crew that goes in the country building railroad crossings for different, like, usually short line railroads that don't have their own.
Cool.
So it was a cool job for a while, because like, I worked with old college friends, and I got to see the world, see the country a lot.
Yeah.
And it was good for me, because I don't think I was ready for any kind of like office job. And, it was never going to be like a long-term career for me, but it was a space where I could settle and kind of find myself. Yeah. And during that time, I a friend referenced a Joe Rogan podcast. Yeah, so some it's funny how people find the space through that venue. And it was Joe Rogan, Amber Lyon. It was a number of years ago now. Yeah. It was a really good podcast. And I think she did two. One, she talked about her experiences in the Middle East, reporting for CNN. And she came back and told how her life changed through ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. And the interview impressed me so much. I thought, like, well, I'm not sure what I'm doing with my life right now at all. So I'll try that.
Okay.
And I came down, I think it was 7 years ago, my first time doing ayahuasca. Yeah. And it was a life-changing experience.
That's where you met Kunti and Chris?
The first time, 7 years ago, I went to, it was Pulse Tours in the jungle. So the second time, I met Kunti and Chris. Okay. And then eventually, through them, I met you.
Yeah.
But at the time, you're coming from that world, the Marines, and no experience around any of this stuff. Just jumping around the deep end. It really, I'll say, shook the system or cracked the egg.
Yeah.
I could... I felt like the reality I was in before was much different, that I was kind of living in my own box, or maybe in a way that we're trained to see things in the West. We have a certain linear view of the world.
Yeah.
And it was basically shattered. And it took me a while to adjust to that, because you see these things, you have these experiences, and then it's integrating them. And what does it mean? Is this real? What happened there?
Yeah.
And over time, I came back to Peru. I came back a second time. That's where I went to... That's where I met Chris and Kunti, and got along well with them.
Well, before we get there, I want to go back to the jungle and kind of your first experience. like, can you paint the picture of, like, where the center was, like, how the ceremonies took place, and a little bit of kind of, like, how... some of the learnings you get and things that got shattered in the process.
Yeah, it was a really special time because the center was brand new. It was Pulse Tours in the jungle. Dan Cleland started it, and they were just building. And I think it was the first New Year's Eve ceremony. So it was a 10-day retreat, and there's three ayahuasca ceremonies. There's been four ayahuasca ceremonies in 10 days. And just leaving the country, I mean, I've been to different countries before, but going down to the jungle, that alone... That immersion, that difference from the Western world, the normal day-to-day, is really healthy. So I think we were in the jungle for 4 days, living, and we would go on boat rides, and we'd experience the jungle, and that itself was very therapeutic.
Yeah.
But I think novelty is very important for the human being's experience. Yeah. A routine can be a killer.
Yeah.
So when you go and experience novelty, I think it's just amazing. I think the neuroscience backs that up as well. And then... I remember actually telling one of the facilitators there, like, wow, this is an amazing experience. I haven't even done ayahuasca yet. And she goes, well, wait till you try ayahuasca. And yeah, she was right. So, and at the time, this is a really big experience for me. I'm coming down to Peru. I've never been here before.
Yeah.
So I did all the preparation, the fasting.
Yeah.
I think I ate every other day and a very vegetarian diet for 6 weeks and everything else they tell you to do. And, I was very disciplined. And it's kind of funny because ayahuasca, say, it gives you what you need, not what you want. Mm-hmm. So I came in, meditative stance, ready to go. And it was all dark in the room. And everyone had this, I didn't know at the time because I thought everyone was having the same experience. I had nothing happened to me the first time.
Yeah.
But everyone had these really powerful experiences. My friend had confirmation in the afterlife.
Oh, wow.
This other guy was addicted to Percocets. He was cured. You know, I'm like, and nothing happened to me. I was like, what the hell? I've been doing this training. And I think that was ayahuasca saying, like, hey, you know, you kind of come at your pace. And the medicine takes a little bit to get into you. And the next night, the second night, I drank again. They gave me a little bigger dose because they knew the first night nothing happened.
Yeah.
And I could tell right away a big experience was coming on. And it's a beautiful place in the jungle. It's all on 20-foot stilts because of floods in the jungle in the area. So you almost feel like you're on an old sea ship or something. So I was walking to the latrine, I'm going up door, and it felt like these walkways were like swaying. And it was very, very psychedelic experience, I suppose.
Yeah.
A very powerful experience. And I walked to the bathroom, and And I see colors going up through the walls, the colors I've never seen before in the wood. Okay, Luke, this is, never seen this happen. And then I'm walking back to the Moloka across the same walkway. Yeah. And if they tell you you want to stay in the Moloka because the energy is protected there, it's a safe space. Not necessarily other spaces are bad, it's just that's where the healing energy is at. Well, I'm going to stop and look at the stars for a bit.
No.
So I turn to the side, and it's in the middle of the jungle, middle of the Amazon.
Yeah.
There's no light. So you can see the Milky Way going across the sky perfectly, and you see all the stars. And I could see all the stars connected. And I looked down into the jungle, and I could see, it's hard to describe, but the best way I can describe it, it's like the world of Avatar.
Yeah.
And underneath that, I saw these red lines of energy connecting everything.
Wow.
And this overwhelming sense of awe that everything in the world's connected.
Yeah.
And that all life is connected, and the stars and the jungle connected in distance. It reminds me of those things you read in history books, like this spiritual rapture that I've never experienced, just read about. And I felt like I was having that at that moment. And the next thing I know, I purge. It's part of the ayahuasca experience. So I purge over the side of the railing, and it's 20 feet high.
Oh.
And what I see is this huge hole opening in the earth, and all this black liquid falling into this hole like 1,000 miles into the earth. And this overwhelming sense that the earth was taking all this negative energy I had accumulated and taking it into itself.
Wow.
And yeah, I stepped back and was overwhelmed by this experience. And one of the facilitators, a really cool guy, he was into he studied a Zen monastery, and he was into the runes and Nordic tradition as well. He's like, hey, brother, how you doing? I'm all right. And he's like, well, when you're ready, go ahead and go back to the Moloka. I'm like, okay. So I go back to the Moloka, and I saw the shaman healing everybody with lines of energy going into everybody, like transparent healing energy. And it was almost, it's very a celebratory experience, very joyful. And I saw like parts of my body that have been injured in the past, like healing.
Yeah.
They weren't cured the next day, but I could see like energy going into those spots. So that was the experience that, like, okay, one that was very powerful and very insightful. And that experience, so much about it didn't seem like just a hallucination.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like a swirl or colors.
Yeah.
Those actual things happening there. And it really made me think of like existence and energy, and there's much more going on than we think there is. At the time it was a shock, but the more I've been in this world and experiencing these things, it's just the way it is now.
Yeah. How did you correlate this with everything you'd been through before? Like, how did you integrate that moving forward?
It was interesting because I talked to Dan, the person that built it. I go, for all the trauma I had and everything I experienced before that, because I feel like it all led to this point. Yeah. And he goes, be surprised how many people tell us that. That feels like the suffering, the trauma, the things I had to go through were for a reason. And from there on, it changed my value system, what values I want to work on, what I want to see myself, what I want to do in the world, what kind of impact I want to make.
Yeah.
In the nature of reality, it became really obvious that we have energy field, we have a soul, and that we need to keep these things healthy and acknowledge them.
Yeah.
And this, no one really tells you how to do that in the Western world. At least no one really told me.
So you've got this amazing moment, this experience shattering moment where you see everything differently.
Yeah.
You go back home after that?
Yeah.
When you go back home, like, was that, what did you do?
Well, I think I told my friends about my experience. I think a lot of them thought I was crazy.
Well, yeah. I mean, you were in Nebraska.
Yeah.
You went back to Nebraska, yeah. And then you tell them about your earth-shattering ayahuasca experience.
Yeah, most people haven't heard of ayahuasca, especially at the time. And I think my friends on the railroad thought, like, oh, you know, Luke's doing this crazy stuff in the jungle. You know, so I'm eating all organic food, and I think I'm only a hippie. You know, maybe I am a little bit, but I started planning, like, what do I want to do? I want to eventually come back.
Yeah.
I want to see more of this world. Like, this seems like a mystery that I didn't know was there. I want to start trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
What does all that mean? I also kind of had my own theories. I started researching plants in North America, like different spiritual plants. I contacted a local Omaha tribe and started going to fire ceremonies and working with, like, Lakota and Omaha fire ceremonies and sweat lodges and a much more spiritual path at home, anywhere I could. Full moon ceremonies, stuff like that.
How did it feel inside of you as you were going through that, like from the life before ayahuasca to the life after ayahuasca, like, you know, the trauma you had before, how did that evolve?
I think when I look at one, I always interested because, like, I'm so happy that this plant medicines are in my life. They've changed my life. It's hard to imagine me going through the world without it now. I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
I also day to day try to appreciate every day and try to think more consciously how I'm living my life, what I'm doing in the world.
Yeah. Are there rituals that you have, like daily rituals or things that you do? Or
So I'm into the Norse runes, and I like wearing runes. I like different runes I'll wear different days, and like different, there's many kind of different spiritual modalities. But ayahuasca opened me up to one spiritual method, so I want to look into more of like the Northern European spiritual ideas and methods, and the runes called out to me right away. I knew about them, but now they start clicking more. I start understanding them more. And each rune you can focus on and meditate on for a week or longer, and you can challenge yourself. So I started thinking more deeply about different spiritual philosophies. I started reading the Bhagavad Gita and Vedic philosophy and different things like that. And I changed what I read. So I tried to, there's so much stuff in the world today.
Yeah.
And it's all that just every day there's a new news item. Every day there's, you know, articles being written, but most of it has really little meaning. And you won't remember it a week or a month or a year after that.
Yeah.
So I started reading more spiritual books, you know, Taoism and things like this. Yeah. And I looked as a way to increase my spiritual health. And that just reading those texts, even though I might not be as efficient or expert as some people, just reading that, I think improved my spiritual health.
Good. And so now we're maybe 4 or 5 years from now, and you're coming back to Peru, and you're meeting with our common friends, Chris and Kunti. Were you still trying to come back to Peru at the time, or were you just kind of like exploring the world?
So I was working on the railroad company, and like I said, it was for the time, it was great. And since my friend owned the company, it gave me a little leeway. So I talked to him, like, hey, is it all right if I take off for like 6 months and come back and work? And you can't do that usually. But he's like, okay, whatever, you can do that. And it really allowed me the financial resources to come back and forth. So I'll come to Peru for a while, do some ayahuasca. I lived in the jungle for a long time. My good friend Bryce, he's trained to be a shaman and he's serving medicine now.
Mm-hmm.
I'd visit him. I met him in the jungle. And a lot of times it was deep diets. When you do a diet in the jungle, a diet is when you combine ayahuasca with a certain plant and you learn the spirits of those plants and you have a really strict diet. And you're in the jungle too. You're in the heat. Bugs, insects, you know, that whole thing. Yeah. It's very challenging. But the rewards spiritually can be great. Yeah. And so I came back and forth did that for a number of years. not straight for a number of years, but come back for like a few months here, a few months there. And always in my mind, I was trying to figure out like, well, what's my place in all this? What do I want to do? Yeah. Like, I could see that every time it came down, I felt like it was a better me. Like that. I think what I experienced in the military, I've written the books that shamans call what they call soul loss. That part of you is taken, an essence of you. The shamans go down the world and retrieve that and bring it back. I felt that part of the essence of me was lost. Yeah. I was completely me. I wasn't this lively of a person anymore. I interact like with people like I would have liked to. And it seemed like it was a struggle to do those things. I felt like over time, those parts of me that I was either separated from, or soul lost, as I would say, were reintegrated. And the new me that emerged was much stronger than what was before.
Do you still stay in touch with people in the Marines that you knew? And
yeah, the Marine Corps was a great experience, and I am really lucky the people I met. Great friends.
Do you share with them what you've been through?
Yeah, no, I want, hopefully soon I will bring some friends down, experience some of this. You saw me kind of lose track of a little bit or don't talk to, but I know they're always there. I can reach out to them, and some, you know, I still keep in track on a regular basis. And eventually I see my working with veterans and exposing to this. Cause I think there's lots of healing to be done in the world. And I think for a veteran myself, oftentimes it takes kind of shock at the system. I mean, I think meditation and these things are really powerful, but sometimes it takes like a really strong dose of ayahuasca to shake things up to be moving on the path you want.
No, one of my guests used to say the deeper the wound, the stronger the medicine.
Yeah.
There's a lot of deep wounds.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting because when I first started, I had a lot of deep wounds. And it was deep soul work, like looking into those parts of myself, healing deep wounds. And it wasn't, ayahuasca is often very beautiful, but it can also be challenging. And I had a lot of challenging ceremonies. But every one of those I appreciate. Every one of those I came out the other side. And every one of those showed me who I was. So after leaving the Marine Corps and some of the things that happened, I felt like I failed. I didn't live up to what I wanted, that career I wanted, even though I didn't see myself. I couldn't. Part of me didn't want it anymore, but part of me still did. It's also that question of identity. Who are you? When you leave the military, so many people have issues with that. Because in the military, you're your tribe, your team, your squad. So defining yourself. And then those challenging experiences really showed me like, well, Luke, you made it through it. You still got it.
Yeah.
And each one of those, I felt stronger. Nowadays, it's much more laid back, I would say, for me. I don't have the deep soul work to do, which is, it's nice.
No, it's been fun to, even in the last 4 or 5 years, even though it was after that, it's been fun to kind of, or fun. It's been, you know, a joy to watch you kind of just change and adjust and find your path.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed that because you don't really necessarily see people like really manifesting like something so different all the time.
No, there's many levels to that. If you told me 10, 15 years ago that I'd be in the jungle doing psychedelic drugs with a crazy shaman, there's no way we would believe you. Like, this is crazy. This is nuts, you know? And even now I kind of reflect on like, you know, look, how'd you get here? But I wouldn't change any of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been this beautiful journey. And I think in the end, your soul's always guiding you.
Yeah.
It's that the consciousness inside of you, that inner voice. And over time, I've gotten better listening to it. Also, over time, I realized if you don't listen to it, you can be in trouble. And for many years, I didn't listen to it, and it caused me a lot of heartache. I kept doing the same patterns and not almost like forcing things instead of just like the Taoist way of going with the flow, going with the universe, going with the Tao, going with your soul.
So you were following your soul, and then you ended up in brain mapping, territory, yeah. brain training. Like, what? How did you go from exploring to brain mapping and brain training?
So, a little bit of serendipity, actually. My friend Erica Cuby in Omaha, Nebraska, was one of the first people to do neurofeedback, neurotherapy, brain training, neuromodulation in the area, and she's really good. And I was just interested in it, and so I would buy small devices myself 10 years ago and start training my own brain, mostly to relieve my own suffering I was having. Most people didn't know what I don't think anyone really knew what I was going through. I kept it all inside. Mm. And with, like, you know, I remember telling my mom years later, like, man, we had no idea. But I was never diagnosed with PTSD, but something along those lines, or trauma accumulates. And what I would describe it as is, like, there's many parts to it, but there's, like, a constant tension in my body, constant, almost so much where day-to-day tasks were becoming challenging. And this would got worse over time, wasn't getting better. So I was researching all kinds. I was eating organic. I was doing yoga. I was doing all kinds of methods. I didn't want to go the prescription drug route. I didn't want to go, because yeah. I saw limitations in that. I never, you know, maybe I should have, but I never reached out to anybody. This is my own thing I want to solve. Looking back, I probably should have reached out. But yeah, you know, I was in the Marines. I had that pride. I wasn't telling anyone yeah. there was anything wrong with me. Now I would talk about it. At the time, like, I'm fine. I'm good. We talk about so Erica, she was in her own little serendipity. She got into this amazing field, and I started listening, reading about brainwaves. I was fascinated by it. I'd buy books on it, and I'd do my own work on it. I'd feel better.
And then can you explain a little bit when you did your own work? Like, what did that entail?
So, when you start brain training, you start off with a brain map almost always, and a QEG brain map. And it's also interesting being who I am, and probably many people like me. There's no way to see psychologists or anything like that. But a brain map, okay, let's look and see what's going on there. And I received a brain map, and what it said is I had high beta waves in the posterior of my brain. Basically, this is a signature for anxiety, PTSD, insomnia, and then comes the training part. So then I would target those brain waves and shrink them down.
How do you do that? How do you train?
So there's many different methods, but the most common method, the field we call neurotherapy, neuromodulation. Neurofeedback is the most used technology. You put electrodes on the scalp, and those electrodes read brain waves you have, delta, theta, alpha, and beta. And beta are the high brain waves, fast brain waves. Yeah. So you have too much of those in certain parts of the brain, and cause anxiety, anxiousness. So instead of, like, going to talk therapy and spending years, you know, addressing these issues, I was able to directly go to those brainwaves and train that down. Mm. And there's many different parts to it. There's many different ways you can go about it. But I started feeling more relaxed. And over time, you can learn how to train meditation, or what we call alpha theta, these deep hypnagogic states where you take people into the subconscious. The subconscious is the place of healing. The subconscious is the place of where trauma is stored. Mm. And we take people down there, they can, much like plant medicines, they can release trauma. It's also a place of creativity. It's really, because most people think that we just have, like, waking consciousness and sleep, but we have all these different degrees in between. And the modern mind mostly has lost touch with that, or our ancient ancestors did. I believe our ancient ancestors didn't have these same problems that we do today, because they probably had shamanic methods, whether shamanic drumming or plant medicines, yeah. to release these traumas. And what ayahuasca is doing in Peru, we're doing a different way through technology. So we train the brain, one, to become more efficient, to regulate, to synchronize networks. When your brain's more efficient, everything becomes easier. Yeah. And if some area is highly dysregulated, and it's beautiful. There's a book called The Symphony of the Brain. It's a very introductory book, but it really is a symphony. You allow those brain waves to synchronize. You can see them aligning. Yeah. And you see that brain becoming healthier just through the brain waves. And a lot of times, those past challenges, those challenges that people had, with some emotional problems, anxiety, depression, they just kind of go away because your brain's more efficient.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people might have, like, say, ADD, they can't focus. Well, there's a brainwave pattern. They have high theta waves in the frontal cortex or, you know, low beta, and we can train those things. So everything's a brainwave pattern.
Yeah.
What we specialize is the spiritual brainwaves. That's what I'm interested in. Yeah. But I guess we'll get to that.
And you're talking let's talk about your company.
Yeah.
And you know, I'll let you introduce the name and, you know, talk about what you're doing there.
So yeah, to backtrack a little bit, how I got here with the company, a year and a half, I came down. Well, so 3 years ago, I met my mentor, Dr. Suter.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more than that now. And I met him at a neurofeedback conference. I just showed up. I read all the books, but I was a nobody at the time. No one knew who I was. But it's a still very small field. Yeah. And I've heard there's about 5,000 practitioners in the world, playing more than that now. And there's about 500 people at the conference. So I was able to meet the PhDs, the scientists, the people with the books, the people with the technology. And one person I met was Dr. Suter. And he was the top guys in the field. I didn't know at the time. I explained to him, like, hey, I'm thinking about combining plant medicines and ayahuasca with, like, neurofeedback and brain training. And he goes, I've been waiting to meet someone like you. I'll train you. Kind of like floored, like, well, I guess I've been waiting for someone like you, you know? And I found out, he tells me he's also a master of Zen and he's studying all these spiritual methods. He was involved in the 60s and became interested in psychedelics back then. So he's been around the block. He's 74 years old. And for him, he looks the fusion in many people in the field that through this brain training, we can change the world, especially the West, because the Western mind often doesn't have the time or doesn't think as a time to sit and meditate and do these kind of things.
Yeah.
But with these technologies, the idea is we get there faster. I think the evidence is that we can do that because we can show the brain exactly what brainwave it needs to meditate.
Yeah.
And it's basically opera conditioning. You show it and the brain responds. So I met Dr. Suter and I looked him up. I wasn't even sure who he was. And turns out he has his own company called New Mind Technologies, and he has over 500 clinics using this technology.
Wow.
Like, is this really going to happen? Is he really going to train me? He seems like a busy guy.
Yeah.
But every 2 weeks we got on a Zoom call and we went over brain maps, and he had a lot of fun with that too. He goes, well, Luke, this is, you know, I train a lot of people, but for you, this is special because it's kind of like a hobby for me too. So we're going to look at the spiritual side of these things. I don't go over this with everybody because most people work in a clinical work, which is great, but we're also doing the spiritual side of brainwaves, which, you know, I think is much more unique in the field, which I'm really happy to be part of. And it's through his help and mentorship that I'm able to do this. So that was about 3 years ago. I came back to Peru right when it opened up after the COVID lockdowns. And I did a 5-week dieta in the jungle, really strong dieta. After that dieta, I felt totally cleansed. 2 years, everything going on, that dieta really helped me out. And then I came to the Sacred Valley and I've been here since. And I've been doing neurofeedback training. And before it was just me.
Yeah,
I was just by myself, and I did a ceremony in Waran, this town next door, with this couple named Safa and Felix, who are amazing shamans that I highly recommend. And, you know, during the ceremony, I had this idea come to me that, you know, Luke, you're just one man here. We can build something because I have my talents, but I know other people with different talents. And our mutual friend Holly came to mind. She's been in the field for 10 years. She's worked with 40 years of Zen in Seattle, a really high level neurofeedback institution that does spiritual training. And I thought about her during the ceremony. I'm like, well, Luke, you haven't talked to her in like 9 months. And she's at 40 years of Zen. Like, that's at the highest end place in the world. There's no way she's come down and help you out or anything. It's a nice thought. And then the next day she called me up right after. Goes, hey, Luke, I'm coming down to Peru. I'm like, well, Holly, you know what I'm doing down here, don't you? She's like, no, I'm doing neurofeedback training. I want to train spiritual brainwaves. She's like, well, Luke, that's what I want to do too. And just that synchronicity, like that brought us together. So she came down for two different times. And it's interesting because there's different parts of the field. So she does different machines. She knows different kinds of technologies. She specializes in STEM, PMF, like, you know, more nuanced. Whereas I'm like the bread and butter neurofeedback research, 30 years of research and tried and proven. Yeah. And Kali's more to more exotic technologies. So it was really fun. I'm collaborating with her, and she came down and showed me her side of the field. And she has an amazing way with clients, and she has an amazing way with really seeing the brain. I think a lot of times in the field, we really look at dysregulation or something being wrong, but she was really able to find like the special sparks in every brain. And it really made me look at things differently. And so now we look at a brain and we want to find those special pieces to train because everyone has that special spark. We have a friend, she's a clairvoyant and energy healer. And we go through with Holly's mentor over a Zoom call about her brain. And we're going through the raw brain waves. We find these little gamma waves and I think certain locations in the frontal cortex. And the idea is to improve her brain, to make it, to improve her gift, better clairvoyant, better healer. We can train those gamma waves. Wow. And that's what's so beautiful about it. Like, you know, these people are gifted, and we go, okay, here it is. We found a little signature in the brainwave. Let's train it. So let's make you better.
You can use technology to train the shaman and the healers to be even stronger.
Correct. That's the theory. And I think we're doing it. And we're part, a lot of it's research too.
Yeah.
But everything is a brainwave. I think when you look at, I love the field and I love the space of plant medicines, but often it gets to a place where like it's, there's no way you possibly understand it.
Yeah.
I think there is a sacred place for a soul in that personal experience, but you know, it's sometimes like there's a brainwave for everything and we can learn about these things.
Yeah. And we had you this week for the Sacred Creativity Retreat.
Yeah.
Before the ayahuasca ceremonies, before the workshops, and then after the ayahuasca ceremonies and the workshops, and then we also did Cambo before all that. And you know, like it was really awesome to watch you like do your work, take the brain maps before, take the brain maps after, and just see the improvements.
Yeah.
And you know, from it was normalization and plasticity.
Yeah.
Like everybody had some improvement.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Like, is this something that, you know, in your work, like as you're getting more data from, you know, the retreats and people you work with, like, what are you seeing?
Well, we're seeing a lot, and it's a big field to look into. And there's so many different plant medicines. And, but the biggest thing we're seeing is we're seeing lots of neuroplasticity. We're seeing lots of changes in the brain. And in some ways, we might still have more to research and figure out exactly what's going on. But in some ways, we're seeing mood changes. We're seeing improvements in energy levels, efficiency. I think someone had a, you know, yeah, one person coming through had a head trauma. And we saw the inflammation go down significantly through the work and the process of ayahuasca and other modalities we've been doing here.
Yeah.
She also said, interestingly, the shaman worked specifically on her brain. She remembers that in this left hemisphere, I think she said. So these are also interesting things. I have to make notes like, okay, shaman worked here, you know, and it's very fascinating because we've seen this in a short period of time, massive changes in brain plasticity and things that usually would take like 3 or 4 months of like brain training to get.
Yeah.
We don't know yet how long that stays.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Yeah. And that's hopefully part of the research that we'll do in the future. I think a lot of times, there's a certain belief in the field that these plant medicines, like there's massive changes in neuroplasticity, but it's more random. And when we're changing the brain, it's much more directed. I don't think it's all completely random because I think these shamans are doing, they're working energy fields, they're changing things. So I think you probably have a little both. So I think a lot of times we're seeing these effects. We're seeing right now we're looking at timelines too. So we're seeing a pre-map, a post-map, like really quick. So eventually over time, we like to do like a 3 month out brain map to see, is that baseline kept and match that with questionnaires? You know, are they retaining the experience where they're at?
That's big. If you can do that, do like 3 months, 6 months, a year, or if you have guests that actually come back,
right?
You know, a year from now, and you can do brain mapping again.
Yeah.
And have you had any chance, like even one person, where you've been able to do like a 3 month or a six? I mean, you could do that on yourself, I guess.
Yeah. No, I have not yet. And I think it's someone we would do that with. We want like a brand new person coming through and trying the medicine the first time. So I would guess that's probably the most significant changes.
Yeah.
So heavy control, I think we'd want to do more than one person. And actually, so we're part a company that does brain training, brain mapping. We're part research. Because the data we're getting is very valuable. And there's been a lot published in ayahuasca, but there's also a lot that can be published. I don't think has been published. Larger studies over time, like we're talking about. And there's all kinds of more interesting plant medicines down here, too, that we can research. And we can also find what kind of brain training goes well to plant medicines.
Mm, yeah.
And I don't think this has been researched a whole lot. Mm. And we might find all kinds of different modalities. I have my favorites, but we know I've another practitioner in the field that works with psychedelics. He talks about that people that do neurofeedback training before they come down have much more powerful experiences. And I could see that because it makes sense. When you're doing brain training, you're strengthening networks to the brain. You're opening channels up. So lots of times psychedelics and shamanism, as powerful as it's often a shortcut. But if we train these networks to reach these higher levels of consciousness through meditation, we're actually training networks. Mm. That means new neurons are being created, new myelin sheaths, you know, new networks are being created to reach that state.
That's great. So you could have a protocol where, as part of preparation, you do brain training before the actual retreat.
Right.
That reminds me about the cat story you told me.
Yeah.
If you don't mind sharing.
Yeah. So, I was talking about last night, anyway, little stories of the neurofeedback field. It's famous in the neurofeedback field, how it started. Someone asked me, like, well, has someone done this with animals, or have I? Like, well, I haven't done it with animals, but one of the famous stories in the field is with cats. So in the 60s, they learned they can train a certain brainwave called SMR on cats. It's just a relaxed concentration brainwave. And they reward the cats with like milk and a little bit of broth. The cats themselves were able to train this brainwave up. Okay, cool. They just tried to see if they could do it. They didn't know what it meant. But they figured out they could actually train brainwaves in animals. Yes. Well, then stuff like this happened back then. I don't think it happens as much today. But NASA had a certain rocket fuel. And this rocket fuel was toxic at certain amounts. So they wanted to know the lethal toxicity. Because in case this gas or fuel got leaking the cabin of a rocket.
Yeah.
And so they put all these cats in a new study, just cats in a study, and they looked, and a certain portion of cats had seizures and died from being exposed to rocket fuel. Another section of cats had no problem at all, just fine. And the scientist doing the study is like, what's going on here? I don't understand.
Yeah.
And he found out, he looked at it, all those cats that were just fine were actually the ones that were trained in that brainwave SMR, and that's how like we first realized the profound impact of brain training. It increases resilience of the brain and nervous system in many different ways, but in this way it was seizures.
Wow, it's incredible just to hear that. When did that happen?
I think it was early 60s.
Early 60s. And to see that, you know, brain training is so powerful, has so much potential, yet you still don't hear about it that much.
I mean,
when you're outside the field, and when I was looking at your reports, I'm like, you go deep, you're able to recommend like supplements that people can take to actually help their brain. You're able to see things that maybe people didn't even know about themselves. You know, and like you would think that this is an essential tool. Like if you go to your doctor,
Yeah.
Like they should do a brain map.
I agree. I think being in the field, for any like psychiatrist prescribed medication without a brain map, would be like a heart doctor.
Yeah.
Prescribing medication, taking blood pressure.
Yeah.
I think it's so critical to understand what's going on in that brain. And I think because ADD, for example, or anxiety, there's maybe four or five different brain patterns can cause that problem. But those prescriptions, they don't know by just talking to that person, yeah, and which brain pattern they have. So it's interesting you bring that up, because even the field is controversial, because everyone in the field, I met so many great people, but they all believe like we have the special technology, does all these amazing things. When's the world going to see it? Because we think it can change the world.
What do you think is preventing it from becoming more of a commodity or something that is, you know, as important as, you know, blood pressure, checking the blood pressure?
I think there's a lot of reasons. I think one, we have the DSM psychological model that's largely based on medication, prescription drug model, I should say. And this is so ingrained in the health system that we prescribe.
Yeah.
So most alternative methods aren't really looked at, even though we're having amazing results.
Yeah.
And most of these amazing results are happening in small, privately funded studies, because there's no reason for a pharmaceutical company to spend billions of dollars to study neurofeedback.
Yeah.
Pharmaceuticals can scale to large and make millions and millions of dollars. Whereas neurofeedback is a small practitioner that takes years to study, to learn, specialize in brainwaves. It's not really scalable up. So we don't have that, the billions that pharmaceutical companies have. We don't have the outreach that they have.
Yeah.
It's much harder for us to educate doctors and people in the health field, which is unfortunate, because I've seen so much massive changes in people that with things that supposedly are untreatable or very hard to treat.
Yeah.
I haven't worked with seizures, but I know many people in the field have worked with people that have different kinds of epilepsy and seizures, and vast improvements.
Yeah.
Like going from severe seizures daily to almost zero, something like
that. That's amazing.
And then we look at, I think in the beginning of the field, so new, people don't make of it. And you had two sides of the field. The one side of the field started work with the SMR brainwave I described before, and they worked with seizures, and that was their special, and ADD and things like this. You notice how the field that look at these alpha waves and theta waves and subconscious meditation, and then rumors start spreading like this is instant enlightenment, and then the healthcare field started looking at that like those are the crazy guys over there, stay away from them. But I think we're having a resurgence, just like psychedelics are having a resurgence. We're seeing like this new age, because the evidence is building.
Yeah,
the word's getting out, people are having results.
Yeah. Are there ways to, as a consumer, if you want access to this, are there ways to kind of bypass and empower yourself, bypass kind of all that current legacy medical system, and kind of take control of your brainwaves?
We look at ourselves as coaches. I'm not healing anybody.
Yeah.
I'm really giving you tools to show your brain how to become more efficient and whatever way that person wants. So, now there's much more neurofeedback practitioners now, and there's probably one in every major city or more. We do brain maps here in Peru. We work with retreats here in Peru. That's our specialty. Yeah. But we also do remote training. So if someone was interested in a home training unit, they could have a home training unit, which is really amazing, because this was impossible 20, 30 years ago. And now we have a much more affordable way to control your own nervous system. I think this is the most important thing. Like, we usually take medications and these different things and drugs, but like now we have direct access to relax your body, or, you know, we do peak performance, we do spiritual training. I think the future of the 21st century will be this. 21st century will be a century of consciousness. I think the 20th century, the atom bomb or the world wars, but I think 21st century will be century of consciousness, because now we're exploring these things, we're seeing things, and I think that's moving in that direction. Yeah.
Beautiful. What about the other tools, like the Muse, or like tools that people can get on their own? Like, are they helpful at all? Or?
Yeah. So there's definitely, it's a little controversial in the field because everyone in the field has their own opinions about everything. But yeah, there's like low cost technologies that people can do. Muse is, a lot of people have great results with Muse. Yeah. Some people would say you probably should get a brain map first before using any kind of brain training device because you want to make sure you're training the brain waves you need. I think there's an argument for that. Yeah. But hey, you know, buy a Muse, $200, try it out, see if it works for you.
But the accuracy is about what number of electrodes or because like the Muse has a certain amount of accuracy and what you use is much more accurate.
Right? Yeah, so I think the Muse is kind of like an entry level device that will help you meditate. But what we do is a much more clinical level.
Yeah.
And I think you're gonna have much more results with a clinical level device. Because we can target exactly those areas of the brain that were, because the Muse headband is just in the frontal cortex, whereas we can target any area of the brain.
Yeah.
And most meditative waves are in the posterior location we call PZ, but it's right in the back of the head. And that's where meditators, that's where you want those brain waves at. But there's other small devices. There's like light entrainment where you can wear certain glasses and it flashes a certain frame rate to entrain your brain. It pushes your brain into like alpha state or beta state. And that's very affordable.
Yeah.
And there is TDCS. It's a small, slight electrical current. You put two electrodes on and it goes through the brain and they've had a lot of results with it.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to try that right away. Current in your brain, that's kind of like...
It's a little more controversial. I would say that lots of people in the field, most people in the field stick with the neurofeedback.
Yeah, yeah.
But some people are playing around with the different kinds of technology.
That's cool.
It sounds like you're in results.
Yeah, no, that's great. And as you were talking, I was like, you know, one of the other big benefit of the work that you're doing is when you see the report and you see what's going on in your brain, it brings some level of validation for things you might have been feeling that you can quite put your finger on.
Yeah.
And that validation is really important. Because I think a lot of times, especially for what happens in the brain, some people are like, am I imagining this? Am I going crazy? You know, like, why is this happening to me? And seeing the report, you can actually explain, like, this is what's happening in your brain. And you know, I could... When I saw you explaining that to our guests in the retreat, I was like, they were like, oh yeah, that makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think that's another benefit that
it is. I think it's very rewarding from my side of things when I can show them their brain map and express it to them, like, hey, this is what's going on, and they resonate with it.
Yeah.
That's so fun for me because then you know this isn't just mental experience or experience they just had in their head, like this, it's manifesting. And look at this packet we give them and see what's going on. I think it's very empowering.
Oh, yeah. And I remember one of the guests that in the ayahuasca ceremony, she was like, wow, I really felt the shaman working on this part.
Yeah.
And then afterward, you showed the brain map. I was like, yeah. You
know? No, yeah, it was interesting because like exactly where she said the shaman was working was.
Yeah.
A healthy outcome.
Yeah.
The brain became more regulated where inflammation went down.
Yeah. Wonderful. So, yeah. Wonderful. Well, we're almost at time.
Okay.
I've got one kind of boilerplate question I ask every guest.
Yeah.
The question is, if you had to capture the essence of leadership in a totem and an animal or plant or something, and I use leadership in the broad sense of somebody who can actually manifest a future, better future for themselves, for their family, for their community.
Yeah.
Like, is there something, some animal that you resonate with or some plant that is like, wow, that's like, that's leadership for me?
Yeah, interesting question.
I've got some examples. I mean, some people pick mushrooms.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think there's a... I think our ancestors always look at animals with certain characteristics, and it brings me to that. The wolf is a famous one, and I think like an elk. The nobility of an elk. I think that resonates with me for leadership.
Yeah, that's beautiful. There's a strength, nobility.
Yeah. And
I don't know how elks work with each other, but I'm sure it's.
I'm not exactly sure. I see a image now.
But, you know, I can see the leadership there. Well, Luke, is there anything else you wanted to cover? Questions you wish I had asked?
Well, it's been great working with your retreat. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
I I really enjoyed it. So thank you. And look forward to doing this again. Yeah. And if anyone wants to reach out about neurofeedback or what we're doing down here, just send me a message or anyone interested. Yeah. So we have a lot of projects going on.
Awesome. I'll put all that information in the show notes people can find you.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you, Luke.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, follow me on Instagram at LeadershipAdelics, or stop by my website and say hi at fouyad.com. That's F-O-O-Y-A-D. There's a lot going on, and I'd love to hear from you all, the listeners that tune in every week. And if you have suggestions for future guests, don't hesitate to reach out. I'm there, and I'd love to get more guests on the show. Thank you. Have a great day.